On today's show, we welcome Camille Herron from Oklahoma in the USA, a Nike ultra runner and coach. Amazing. Welcome to have you. Great to have you here, Camille.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so great. So great. I watch your Instagram feed and I see what you're up to, and you just look super fast, super fit. And I just can't wait to have this chat today. I know people are going to get a lot out of it. I'm really looking forward to it. But for those people who have not yet come across you, could you tell us a bit about your endurance life?
Yeah, I've been running ultras for the past 4 years, and I started off in 2015 running pretty spectacularly, making the jump from marathon to ultras. I ended up winning, I won a national title for 100K, which qualified me for the 100K World Championship. And I ended up winning the world title there. And then 6 weeks later, I ended up breaking the world record for 50 miles. And then I guess another 6 weeks after that, I won won the 50K world title. So my first year, I won two world titles and broke a world record. And
wow.
Yeah, it was quite the way to start off my career.
So, like, leading up to that, you know, I'm so intrigued because you were a runner, right? So, like, running ultras for the last 4 years. If we go even further back, like, so marathon, could you tell us, because, like, amazing for you to be like, and what a year. But going back even further, what was it like for you prior to getting into ultra? Were you, you know, was it like a long time runner, like since you're a kid, or is that something that only started a few years before? Like, what was the path up to this ultra brilliance like?
I guess, like, just talking about my whole running history, which I usually talk about, I actually grew up as a basketball player, so I'm pretty tall as a female runner. I'm built like my dad. I've got long arms and long legs, and we had to go out for track in the seventh grade, and I found out from the first day that I could just run and run and run. So, I just found my niche as a distance runner and, took off with it starting in 1995. I ended up running very briefly in college. I ended up having a lot of injuries when I was a young runner. And so I ended up getting what's called a medical hardship. And I basically just became a recreational runner. And then I met my husband in the meantime, who was a marathoner, and I was just helping him with his running career. And one thing led to another, and he started coaching me. And my marathoning career took off after that, and I ended up making the Olympic marathon trials 3 times. And got my marathon time down to 2:37.
Whoa.
And yeah, so I was a pretty good marathoner. How I kind of segued into the whole ultra thing was I started running back-to-back marathons, like 1 weekend after another. I became what's called a marathon maniac.
That's cool.
And so everybody was like, well, you know, you're running like, 52 miles, back-to-back marathons, like that's an ultra. It was kind of like everybody was kind of hinting to me that they thought I should try ultra running. And I finally dived into it. I actually ran my first ultra in 2013 at Two Oceans in South Africa. I didn't really get into it until 2015. And I mean, I had immediate success, like right away. So I had spent years being a marathoner. I've run like 36 marathons. So I've run a lot of marathons, it was really cool to get into a new sport basically, and, just reinvent myself. So.
You know, that's so cool. And to think, like, cars have like an odometer, and you can see like how many Ks that car has gone. If we had odometers, your one would be like right up there with the amount of Ks that you put under those shoes.
I'm actually, yeah, I mean, I started running a lot when I was in college, or as a grad student, and I've actually averaged over 100 miles per week since November of 2006.
Wow.
So I'm approaching, I'm 37 years old, and I will approach 100,000 lifetime miles before I turn 40. So,
wow. Holy goodness gracious. That's like just around the world.
Quite a few times.
That's impressive. So breaking a world record, like, okay, you're this champion ultra runner now. Amazing. But like a world record? What was that like?
Yeah. So, like I said, my first world record that I set was for 50 miles. And, I mean, I've since gone on to break, the 12 hour, the 100 mile and the 24 hour world records. So I officially hold 4 world records and also a Guinness world record, dressed as a superhero, in the marathon. So I've technically got 5 world records, but I always forget about that Guinness one. So
what was the superhero that you dressed as? Wonder Woman?
Yeah, I dressed as Spider-Man.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Cool.
So yeah, I know you guys are probably really big on the whole costume racing and yeah, it's kind of a big deal, I guess, over in the UK. And but yeah, I ended up dressing as Spider-Man and ran 2:48 in the marathon, and yeah, it was pretty cool.
That would be interesting though. Like I mean, I haven't even done a marathon distance yet, but I can imagine that Spider-Man just blitzing past me. I'd be like, well, of course, you know, he can do that, the web shoot thing. I bet you he's done that to be so fast.
Yeah. I actually did. Record. Oh yeah. So the world records, I mean, what's it like to set a world record? I mean, the very first one that I set was the 50 miles in 2015. And I mean, I was just completely, like, you know, blindsided by my ability to do this. I mean, it was literally my third or fourth ultra ever when I broke the world record. So I was still very new to the sport, and I mean, it was just hard to wrap my head around, like, oh my gosh, I was born to do this. And even when I was out there doing it, I mean, I had won the 100K world title, so it wasn't like I just completely came out of nowhere. But I mean, I knew I had the ability to do it. But yeah, to actually do it, you know, to break a record from 1991. And I mean, it felt like, oh my gosh, like, I feel like I could retire now, you know, just to set like one world record. I mean, that's, you know, quite a lifetime achievement. But yeah, I mean, I ended up setting my sights on breaking more world records and going for big wins at races like Comrades. And, I've just kept going with it. So,
yeah, my coach is my boss. My coach is going to actually do the Comrades, I'm pretty sure, and that's sort of coming up. And hearing about that race, and it's a big one. I mean, look, obviously a lot of these that you're doing are like massive races, but to think about, for you being the best in the world, like, of all the people from all the different places everywhere that there is, you know, what is it, like 7 billion people, you're the best. What? Yeah. 5 different times you're the best. And then the records stand. What?
Yeah. Oh. It's pretty amazing. But I mean, I'm just so down to earth. Like, I mean, I feel so normal. Like, I just go, like, hang out with my local running club or my local friends and have a beer and eat pizza or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I'm just born with this talent. Like, I got to give credit to my parents for blessing me with this, you know, one in a billion type of talent. And then my husband coaching me and guiding me. I mean, I met my husband at a jazz festival, and I mean, what are the odds of two runners meeting a jazz festival? And I mean, who knew, you know, what was in store for us and where our lives would take us. But yeah, I mean, you don't know what you're capable of unless you try. And so it was just a matter of me trying you know, trying to go further than the marathon and finding out I could do this. So
Yeah, it's pretty. And like, I'm guessing, is it Connor? I'm guessing he he would definitely have to say he sprinkled some pretty good coaching dust in there, you know, as well.
He did. But yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, my parents. I mean, I think about, there's so many amazing stories I could tell from my life, and just my will to push myself through pain. And yeah, I mean, it goes much further back than what's happened the past 4 years. And yeah, I mean, there's so much that goes into ultra running. I mean, just beyond the physical aspect, a lot of it's mental. And I mean, I just have a very strong mental will, and I'm excited to keep going further too with it and just see what happens. So
tell us about that then. The mental drive, say, you know, you've cultivated that. I'd love to dig into that. Like that for mine, in my head, right? Like, yes, our bodies, we have to get our bodies to do things, whatever else, but it really, I feel like life hinges on our ability to direct our life with a strong mental space. And the stronger our mental space, it almost doesn't matter what we come up against, that we, and you look throughout history of all the terrible things people have been through and all the amazing things people have done, mindset has been there helping them to like get through pain or achieve things. So how is it that you've cultivated that? Would you mind telling us about that journey?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much of that is genetics or like the whole nature versus nurture thing. I mean, who knows if it is a genetics thing, like your mental strength. But I mean, I can reflect back on when I was playing basketball as a kid, and I got my first basketball goal as a 7-year-old. And hearing stories from my dad and my grandpa played basketball, collegiate basketball, Oklahoma State. And just hearing stories from my dad about how they would practice without water for like 6 hours. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, no one forced me to do it. You know, I was pretty self-motivated, but I mean, I would get out my driveway and practice until I was like blacking out. And then I would run inside and I would have like a sandwich and a Coke and some pickles. And then I'd run back outside and I would keep practicing. And it would be like July, like 2 o'clock in the afternoon in July. And I'm a 7-year-old practicing out my driveway until I'm blacking out. I mean, how many other little kids, you know, would push themselves like that? But yeah, I mean, both my parents were good athletes, and, you know, just hearing stories from my dad about, you know, practicing with grit and, you know, pushing through anything without water. I mean, it was pretty ingrained in me from a young age to be able to push myself like that. So.
Yeah. See, that's interesting. The whole grit thing. And to like, I mean, I remember stories of like Michael Jordan. That's very Michael Jordan-esque, you know. yeah, he would just be out there shooting, and you know, even say like I look at my kids, and you can try and get them into different things, but that inbuilt thing, it's there, isn't it? Like you can sort of see if like my daughter, she'll be out there shooting netball, not until she's blacking out. So it's different, but you can certainly see that if you know. I wouldn't have trained for that style of sport when I was a kid as much as she is. She obviously has a love for it.
Yeah.
Even hearing this, like pushing it to the blackout, into the ultra, like I like to listen to a bit of Rich Roll. I like to, I've been listening again to a bit more of David Goggins' book. And, you know, especially with David Goggins, I suppose that he talks about pushing it to the edge where, you know, you're in this world of pain, and then pushing further. Are you finding yourself constantly finding that, finding the edge of where you think it's possible, and your mind might be telling you, "Oh, this is it," or your body feels like it, and then you push it, just keep going further?
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, it's almost like I have like no pain, my level of pain tolerance, like I don't even know, like to put it in perspective. When I started running as a teenager, I had 7 stress fractures. So I broke my bones 7 times. And I remember at the time thinking that the pain wasn't that bad. Like I didn't even complain about it. And I mean, literally the doctor had to say that I don't think you should be doing competitive sports. Like, I'm almost a danger to myself because my ability to push through pain is so high. And so I, as I got into being an adult athlete, I had to learn to recognize pain. I had to learn to be able to say that, okay, I think my bone is broken. Maybe I should back off,
Holy. Iron Woman.
Yeah. So I've had to just for my own, you know, self-preservation and being able to do what I do as an ultra runner, I have to be able to recognize pain and to be able to say that, okay, I need to do something to fix this because if I'm going to be running, you know, for 24 hours or longer, like I can't, if I'm getting a foot in my, or getting pain in my foot, I need to do something about it to be able to keep myself going. So I've had a lot of moments in my ultra career where I've had to recognize pain and be like, okay, something, I got to fix this, you know, if I want to break through and break those barriers. So
this is really intriguing that like 99.99% of people, this is a stat I've made up, but I'm imagining it's right, is that 99.99% of people are going to say, whoa, I'm in pain, I've got to stop. In your mind's like, there's some pain there. I could definitely keep going for the entirety of this race and more. However, because that would be an interesting conversation. Excuse me, doctor. Could you just check that my leg's not broken? Do you know, like, no one's calmly coming over and saying, could you just do a little check? Except for you. You're the one. You're that one person. So you must get some raised eyebrows at times. And when they're like, yep, it's broken, so we better get you to come over here. We're like, I might just finish the race, then we'll see each other. You know,
exactly.
Like,
That's exactly it. Yeah, I mean, there's times that, like, Even like when I started marathon training, I was like 8 weeks out from my first marathon, and I had a really bad cold, and I was coughing really bad, and I remember going out for a run and feeling pain in my back and feeling what felt like a knot in my back. And I went and showed it to my friend later, and she's like, Camille, I think you dislocated a rib.
I
ended up going to a chiropractor, and the chiropractor checked me out, and he's like, no, you did not dislocate a rib. You need to go to the emergency room. And so I had actually fractured a rib, and I ended up taping up my rib cage, and I continued training. I never took time off for it, and ended up running my first marathon, and I just missed qualifying for the Olympic trials. But I mean, like you said, I mean, this is one of those things where, I mean, I'm such a danger to myself almost, because I will push through any kind of pain. I will train through broken bones. And yeah, as an ultra athlete, I mean, yeah, being able to handle a lot of pain is a key to what we do. But at the same time, you don't want it to be such a detriment that it like hinders you from, you know, getting to the finish line. And so, yeah, I've had to become more cognizant of pain and not just tune it out, you know, because I'm doing such amazing things. So
that's amazing. I think I am attempting to have my mind land at that place where you are. And, cause even I did this 33K run and my knee just started, like that little band down the side of the knee. It just started
and then
I got to a point. Yeah, I could barely bend my knee, and I thought, no, block it out. Imagining Dave Goggins, not keep going. And then it just got tighter and tighter and tighter. I'm like, look, no, I've got to walk now. And I gave into it, right? Yeah. Now I wonder, like, you know, if the same thing was happening to you, would you just feel that pain? You're like, that's weird, or that's a little bit annoying, or whatever it might be, and then you just keep going.
Yeah, I've literally pushed myself to the point of like barely conscious. And yeah, like I said, fracturing bones. I mean, I've trained and raced through fractured bones. I've done some pretty crazy things. And I've had to learn to be more cognizant of my pain, because I mean, I don't want to have a sort of injury that permanently disables me. Mm. I mean, I get to
the finish line carrying a leg, like just hopping to the finish line, like this isn't right, guys. I'm sure that this, do you know?
One moment that I had was 2 years ago. I ended up tearing my MCL in a trail race. Well, I mean, you know, this could be a potentially career-ending type of injury. And being my stubborn self, I tried to push through 11 miles of hobbling to the finish line with a torn MCL. And I basically said to myself, you know, I can't be doing this. Like I'm way too talented to be, you know, to be stubborn like that and, you know, potentially be ending my running career. And so I've had to be a lot smarter with my health the past few years. And, you know, if it comes to a point where, you know, I don't want to have kidney failure, I don't want to you know, completely shred up my knee. And so I've had to become more like self, you know, the whole self-preservation thing, being able to recognize when a pain is not worth pushing through,
And so you're also a coach, right? So yeah. That would be interesting because I'm wondering then now, and I'd be interested to know about what it's like for you coaching, but when you're dealing with other people and you see them pushing too hard, or if they're experiencing pain, or, you know, the coach hat must be on, but then also in the back, like coach hat saying, yeah, we probably need to pull up, take it a bit easier, maybe. I don't know. You can tell me. And on the other hand, you're like, you could probably do another 100 miles. Keep going.
I would say that most people, if they get a pain, that they're usually pretty soft. Like they're not going to be like at like the level that I'm at where I will push through anything. A lot of it depends on experience too, because a lot of like new runners may not be used to being in pain and being able to recognize, you know, something that they, you know, could just back off and keep training through it, versus a serious injury that is, you know, changing their gait and they legitimately need to rest. I think a lot of it just comes with experience and being able to read your body. And I'm very fortunate that I have a whole medical team around me of people with different expertise that can help me work through any body issues I have. Working with athletes of all different ages and abilities and, you know, beginners versus more experienced. I mean, it's a pretty interesting thing to see how other people handle pain.
It is an interesting thing because it's very, I suppose there's probably similarities and you would see so much of it, I suppose, as a coach also being in all of these events, but it's a very personal thing, how the pain comes, what that triggers in your mind. You know, like your mind just seems to just like, it's a little tiny blip on the radar, whereas other people can talk that it's all consuming. You're feeling it everywhere, top to bottom. Your mind's screaming at you to stop. And then all of a sudden, then it starts to become this big question of why. You know, your why seems to kick in as to the self-preservation why is now having to kick you to say like, yes, I could go further, but that might mean I don't get to do it long term.
Yeah,
so exactly. I really find this pain thing very interesting. Like my first ultra, hopefully I'll finish it. My goal, my slogan is just not to quit. So even if I have to walk, I'll just walk it towards the end. But that's 85K or 53 miles coming up in 6 weeks. And so
cool.
If you've got any tips for like, you know, how to, you know, or I suppose how you sort of said you like manage things to try to avoid injuries. Have you changed your running style, or do you wear the right kind of shoes, or are you getting massages after, or like, what are some of the things that you do to sort of keep that body fit or in tune, I suppose?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, there's a lot to it, but when I think of, you know, how do you get through an ultra, I mean, there's going to be so many highs and lows in a race that you have to think of every challenge that you encounter as a roadblock that you just have to troubleshoot and jump over. For me personally, the only thing that would keep me from finishing a race would be some sort of very extremely debilitating injury or I've had a couple of concussions that have knocked me out like unconscious. You know, I think it would have to be something pretty serious to knock you out. But, you know, most issues that ultra runners deal with are like GI issues or blisters or dealing with the extreme like heat and humidity. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of challenges that you can encounter in trail running and ultra running that you can just work through. And it's really just about having a positive mindset too. And I mean, I go into every ultra and see it as kind of like this day long journey that I'm going through. And, yeah, you just, it's kind of like the day in the life of, you know, a typical lifetime that you go through and all the highs and the lows that you encounter in your life. So.
Okay. I like it. And I love the idea of mindset. You know, you've talked about grit, you've talked about positive mindset, troubleshooting, you know, like you've got it in spades. So if you had to, and it might just be the positive mindset, I'm not sure, but if you had to say what makes up a successful mindset, would there be anything else that you would add to that list?
To a successful mindset? Yeah, I mean, I was telling one of my coaches growing up as a basketball player the other day that my favorite thing that I learned from him was attitude is everything. And it was always that, in fact, we had t-shirts that said attitude is everything. I've always had that view, like, you know, even when I get like frustrated about anything, I always like kind of take a step back and I'm like, okay, just see the positive in something. You know, even like training for your first ultra. And I mean, there's so many, I don't think I've ever had a perfect build up to a race. Like I've always had some sort of monkey wrench thrown at me. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you just have to like, you know, jump over, work through those challenges in your training, you know, to get to the starting line. And then it's the same thing with the race. You're just having to work through challenges during the race too. So, it's really, there's so much about just the mindset. And I mean, I would also stress about surrounding yourself with other positive people. Because I've got my husband's my biggest cheerleader. Like, I mean, I go through many times in my training for big races where I'm just not having a great day. I'm not feeling great or my mood's not great. And you know, my husband being my coach is able to tell me, you know, well, maybe you need to take a day off. Like maybe I'm tired or need to get a good night's rest or, so yeah, I mean, it's really helpful to be surrounded by positive people and that can help you read your daily mood and, you know, help you make the right judgment calls. So.
Geez. And I love that. I just mindset is everything in my head. And like, does it, all challenges just become, or all problems, I suppose, become challenges. Like the idea of obstacle, you know, and again, from a positive mindset is how do I get over, around, under, through this thing? Whereas yes, to somebody else, that might just be a dead end. And again, yeah, it's only the thoughts in your mind, and you can change those thoughts. You could start off feeling negative and go, but what if I thought of it like this? So I feel like you can train yourself to think in this positive headspace. And like you say, surrounding yourself with others, all of a sudden when you're in that negative space and someone's like, no, it's not, that's a wall, climb it.
I think that's a big shift. I think the mind becomes more important and making the jump from the marathon to ultras, because I mean I have a lot of marathoning friends that any single little thing goes wrong and they throw in the towel. And I mean, yeah, I mean there's definitely less room for error in a marathon. But when you make that jump to ultra running, you're going to encounter so many things that go wrong, like one thing after another after another. I mean, I've run all these world records and people would be shocked by all the things that went wrong in the races. And it was all about me having to troubleshoot and to persevere and to overcome those things. So, I mean, I would say, you know, anybody making the jump to ultra running is to prepare yourself that it's going to be a whole day long journey of trying to troubleshoot and to get to that finish line. And it's really just a lot of it's your attitude. So
I like it. And so being that you're just at this super high level, super elite, best in the world, do you find that and it's something that I've only sort of come across very, very recently, is the idea that there could be, say, doping in the sport. In my head, like, I know this sounds bad, but like, in my head, I probably have always just imagined, like, you know, people getting really big on steroids and doing whatever else. And then, you know, the whole like Lance Armstrong thing, you know, that was like, whoa, okay, that's that. I mean, but maybe of course, you know, that these people want to get to that level. Do you feel like that is something that could be going on, you know, in the sport? And is there testing? Is that something that they do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my very first ultra, I ended up finishing 11th, and only the top 10 got honored at the Two Oceans Ultra Marathon. So I was left off the podium, and it was extremely disappointing to me at the time. I felt like I had underperformed, and I mean, it was just not a good way to start my career. But I was on the phone with my husband, and he was like, well, you know, how much you want to bet that someone in the top 10 will test positive for a drug? And sure enough, the top woman, who's a Russian, tested positive for a steroid, and I ended up getting bumped up to the top 10. But I was never honored. Like, I never got my medal. I never, you know, I missed out on that moment. And I mean, it was shocking for me to make that jump into ultra, mountain ultra trail running. Because I mean, I thought that, you know, there's not really much prize money in the sport to begin with. I thought, you know, people would be doing the sport for the love of running and, you know, for the reasons that I do it for. So I was extremely disappointed, you know, right from the start to find that even in ultra running, there is doping. And so, yeah, I mean, as I've progressed into the sport, I mean, it's really shocking that there is basically no out of competition drug testing going on. And then, I mean, there's very little in competition drug testing as well. And so, yeah, I mean, this is something I've become extremely passionate about. I mean, I want to do what I can to help increase the amount of drug testing that's going on. So,
And like, you know, I guess why not? Like, sometimes, you know, this also could sound bad, but you could imagine, like, maybe they, I mean, it's probably very unhealthy for people, but maybe they need to have a drug fueled Olympics and a non drug fueled. If it's going to help people to run the 100 meters in 3 seconds and somehow they're just a blur, then they're at the finish line, cool. That would be cool to see. But, like, let's keep it that it's a level playing field. I suppose that's probably what it really is about, is that it should be a level playing field and that it should come down to natural talent.
Yeah, well, I mean, the reason why, I mean, there is anti-doping is because – it's harmful to your health. So, I mean, they're doing it to protect the athletes. I mean, there's, if you had a drugged Olympics, I mean, the women would be like the East Germans back in the 80s. They'd basically be turning into men. And so we don't want that. Like, we don't, I mean, the anti-doping is there for a reason to protect the athlete's health. But yeah, I mean, athletes are definitely doping in mountain ultra trail running. I mean, you see, there's definitely been instances of athletes making very large leaps in a short period of time. And, you know, everybody's cheering them on, you know, they've got sponsors behind them. Maybe there's not prize money, but there's a lot of sponsorship money. And so you see athletes making these large leaps in their performance very quickly. And I mean, if they were a marathoner, if they were like in one of the mainstream Olympic events, everybody would be raising their eyebrows at them. But in our sport, it's like they're cheered on, you know, they're celebrated as heroes. And I'm not naive to this because I'm coming from the marathon where I was in out of competition drug testing, and I'm aware of all this. But yeah, I mean, it's It's like there's definitely some shady stuff going on and people making large leaps very quickly. And yeah, something needs to be done about it. So.
And you talk about the sponsorships and you talk about the prize money not really being there. And you could sort of see that that could be a driver. Like if this is what I want to do and this is what I want to do for a living and I've got pressure from sponsors or brands and they may not necessarily be putting pressure on, but I bet that every athlete that's sponsored would definitely be putting themselves under pressure to keep that arrangement going because it allows them to, and they know they only have you're not ultra running when you're 90. You still could probably get out there, but you're probably not going to break the world record at 90. Apologies to any 9-year-olds that may be in contention to break the record, but I would imagine that's probably not a thing, right? So that's one interesting thing that's driving it. Like, it's a shame that there's not more money there in the sport to see these athletes doing what they love and what we love to watch. But at the same time, do you find that is ultra a world where there is equality in that sort of sponsorship for men to women?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, women don't make up a very large percentage of all the runners in mountain ultra trail running. So I think maybe it was like 30% versus, 70% is made up of men. And so, yeah, I definitely, since I've gotten into the sport, I've noticed, I mean, there's a lot more sexism happening. And I think a lot of it is because the sport is more male dominated. And I mean, I when I made the jump and I, started having all this success, I realized that I needed to get an agent to work on my behalf to make sure that, I'm getting a fair deal in terms of sponsorships. And I mean, it was a rough process for me my first year. But yeah, I'm very fortunate that my agent was able to work out my sponsorship situation. But I know that, I mean, I've had sponsors like just wanting to give me product. And I mean, lots and lots of sponsors wanting to just give me product to promote their product. And the thing is, I mean, I'm a once in a generation athlete. I mean, I'm very aware of that, my talent is valuable and the things that I'm doing are valuable to the sport and to the history of the sport. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, sponsorships in the sport, and I don't think that athletes and especially women are getting what they should be getting. So.
Yeah, and like a pair of shoes or a big contract, it almost, or like, five pairs of shoes, it almost doesn't feel right, especially if you look to the right or you're having a chat and it turns out that a guy next to you that perhaps can't even keep up or maybe not even hitting records is actually getting, a massive
more
amount of money. Yeah, it is a funny thing. Like I see a country overseas, might be a Nordic country, but has kind of made it illegal to have pay gaps. And I think that, like, that is a good sign of what is hopefully to come. In Australia, we have like really a big movement right now about making things fairer for women. And, I suppose at times it can be controversial, but I don't really see how it could be, because let's just have it where it's fair and it's based on merit. If you are the best athlete in the world for women everywhere and often even, beating almost all the men, well, let's reward that.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I'm very fortunate that my agent has been in the shoe industry and that he's worked with both men and women athletes. So he knows what men are getting contractually. And so, I mean, that gave him a bit of negotiating power when trying to work for me and, figure out what I should be worth. And so, yeah, I mean, my greatest advice to any female athlete is, I mean, if you're doing, amazing things, that, it's probably in your best interest to have someone working for you on your behalf, whether an agent or a coach or somebody that knows the industry and that understands your value as an athlete. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot to it as well, as far as things like, you know, we're talking about social media. I mean, I've had sponsors be like, oh, you know, well, we'll pay you this amount because you have this number of followers on your Instagram or whatever. And yeah, I mean, you look on Instagram and there's people that are like buying followers that, you know, have like 350,000 followers, you know, because they're, you know, showing off their boobs or something like that. And so, I mean, it's kind of, you know, taken away from sport, what sports is, you know, and valuing people's talent over their number of followers. You know, the genuine athletes out there that, you know, should be, you know, sponsored and getting, you know, what they deserve. So yeah, it's kind of a weird dynamics right now in sports marketing. And yeah, I mean, I'm definitely willing to talk about it. And the cool thing about our sport is we do have we've got people that are trying to promote women more, and things like Trail Sisters over here that, you know, is trying to encourage more women to get into the sport. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of women doing amazing things that we're, you know, we're talking about women winning ultras outright and beating all the men. And I mean, I think it's really good for the sport that, you know, there is becoming a greater interest in what the women are doing. So yeah, I'm happy to be part of that movement. I'm very fortunate that I've won a couple of races outright, and yeah, just keep that momentum going. So,
and there must be, like, you know, see my daughter might see the Firebirds, which is like a Queensland netball team, on the telly, and she sees those ladies and she's like, wow, like, those ladies are on TV. And, you know, I think probably for her, you know, the last 5 or 10, well, let's say the last 2 to 3 years here in Australia, you know, we're seeing the women's football, we're seeing the women's cricket, we're seeing women, you know, in all different sports really starting to get up there and be televised. Yeah, and so to see that, say, women like yourself, you know, it'll be someone like my daughter. I've got another daughter who's only one. She will be coming up. She'll get to see women like yourself. She'll see women everywhere on TV. And able to think, actually, you know what? I can do this thing. I could do that. You know, much like your dad in your ear saying that grit and blacking out and, you know, training for all these things. And you think, well, that's what's possible. Thank you to you for being such a light for women everywhere.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, when I was growing up playing basketball in the mid 80s, and yeah, my dad was my role model, but my first woman role model was Lynette Woodard, who was the first female globetrotter. So I saw Lynette on TV, and she was the very first female professional athlete I ever saw. And I mean, to see a woman on TV, you know, on the media, was very impactful to me. And I remember thinking, you know, I could do that. Like, I want to be a globetrotter. And so, I mean, I think that there's almost a huge responsibility by the media nowadays to cover women athletes, because I mean, we're so impactful to the next generation. And yeah, I mean, I've had friends like tell me that, you know, that their daughters are so inspired by me, and you know, sending me pictures of their kids, you know, running with their hair down and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, I mean, I realize that what I'm doing is, you know, it's far reaching beyond my own personal goals, and, you know, just being able to be impactful to others. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really made me appreciate, like, what I do and what I can do for others and be able to inspire future generations. So,
yeah. So isn't it so interesting, again, that, like, that mindset of realizing, not only to continue pushing yourself to be great, but I suppose seeing that this thing is now bigger than you. Like, it's really become something very big and inspirational worldwide.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, just if you could imagine going back and just telling that little, you know, 7-year-old, however old you were, you know, in the driveway, keep this up. Like, this is, you're going to go so far.
I know. And I don't even know what I'm going to do in the future, but I mean, I've got a whole bucket list of goals I want to do. And, yeah, I mean, every time I toe the line for any race, it's kind of like, I mean, I get goosebumps thinking of like, what am I going to do today? You know, and so for me, it's exciting. Like I'm every, you know, I'm blessed for what I do. And I feel that appreciation for my ability when I race, that, you know, I'm honoring my talent, you know, by every opportunity I have. And, yeah, and just being able to push the limits. I mean, it feels so good to be able to cross a finish line, or, you know, to meet a goal and to realize that, wow, you know, I did it, you know, all that work was worth it. So.
I love it. I love where your head's at. I love your mindset. Is there any of those bucket list items that you'd be keen to share?
Oh gosh. It's like forever long. Like, it's so funny. I guess, as you know, in terms of my short-term goals, I'm going to be racing Western States in June, and Leadville in August, and then the 24-Hour World Championship in October. So yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, I've done all these like road and track world records, and I've won Comrades. I've had most of my success as a road racer, and I'm very determined to become a good trail runner as well. And so I'm hoping, you know, that I can start having, you know, achieving these big feats on the trails as well. But yeah, looking beyond that, I mean, I want to do big, like really big epic things, like Marathon des Sables, you know, running across the Moroccan desert, and like go to UTMB and like run, you know, nobody's won Comrades, UTMB, and Western States. So I would love to become the first person to like win, you know, the three like kind of big, you know, big road, big trail races. So that would be cool.
Wow. And what a legacy you're leaving. Like I am just so impressed. I've been blown away by everything that we've touched on today. I really can't say enough how grateful I am that you've taken the time to have a chat. So, you know, for people that are listening in, if you had to give them, say, three tips from your perspective, they might be getting into endurance activities. They may very well be endurance activities and looking to step it up. But would you have three tips that you would give?
Yeah. I mean, I think that running is a lifetime sport, and it's going to have a lot of highs and a lot of lows. And you just have to, like, just work through it. I mean, it's, you know, it's representative of life. And I mean, it's running is tough. I mean, it's very tough. I mean, I've probably had like way too many injuries that I, you know, shouldn't have pushed through. But at the same time, like, I mean, it makes you enjoy life more to be a runner. It makes you get outside and, you know, to enjoy the scenery and the animals and the environment. So yeah, I mean, no matter what, like, I've always learned to appreciate what running does for me and how it makes me feel. So yeah, I mean, no matter, you know, I'm one of the best in the world, and I still get out there and feel like I'm running for stress release every day. So yeah, I definitely value how it makes me feel. As far as like anything, let's see, two other things. Yeah, I mean, I tell people when I toe the line that the last thing that I tell myself is to let the magic come out. And I feel like all of us have, you know, these big dreams and goals that we have. And, you know, if you've prepared well and, you know, to toe the line, that we all can transcend and do, you know, amazing things that we thought weren't possible. And so I love this feeling of, you know, just letting that magic come out, you know, letting that feeling show. And it makes me, I end up smiling because I'm just like, I'm literally smiling the whole time, just thinking about how excited I am to be there and to be able to let that magic come out and let people, you know, see what's possible. So yeah, I guess that would be my second big thing. My third big thing, I already mentioned it, was to smile. When you race, it's amazing how, you know, even if you're in pain, if you just put a smile on your face and you think about like just being positive about the experience, that it makes such a big difference. I mean, I remember running my 100-miler at Tarawera back in February, and it got really ugly those last 20 miles. And I, like, every time I would come into an aid station, I would start seeing the people and everything cheering me on. And I mean, it made me smile just seeing the people, and that made me feel better. So yeah, I just tell people to smile and, you know, enjoy the moment. Even when you're in pain and you're not feeling well, you know, just try and put a smile on your face. So.
I love it. I love it. And I'm sure that you're going to do wonderfully well with all of these events coming up. But for people that might want to work with you, whether it be as a coach or even following along on your journey, what is the best places for them to reach you? Like social media handles, websites?
Yeah, I'm very interactive on social media. I love communicating with people, and I'm active on Twitter and Instagram at Run Camille is my handle. So Camille Heron, Camille Heron, Heron, 2 R's. but yeah, my handle is at Run Camille. And then I'm also got a Facebook page and that people can follow things. And probably be sharing this podcast here after we do it. So,
awesome.
So yeah, I love, and then also our coaching. So we started our own coaching business here last year, and we've been able to help people all over the world. So that's been a lot of fun for us. But yeah, our coaching website is runwithcamille.com. And we've got a camp that we're putting on here in July. And everybody, when we started our coaching business, everybody was like, oh, you should put on a camp and you need to have beer there and all this stuff. So
that's cool.
So if
people are there and they want to work with the absolute best in the world, why not? Come reach out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I love it. And I think it's not even just about learning how to move your body and to do all the different things. I think being around you and even just from this chat, I feel blessed that to have touched on your mindset and gotten to know you a bit better. So I really just want to say thanks for taking the time to have a chat.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. It was fun chatting with you. And I feel like it does because I realize you're from Australia and not from the UK.
Yep. I'm sure costume races are cool here too. It's all good.
Gosh. And I do want to get to Australia. So I've got a lot of Australian friends that do trail running and ultra running. So I got to get over there one of these days.
Awesome. Well, we'd be very happy to have you.